Richard, back to Arthur Clarke's statement about 2010, the year we make contact. What did he mean by the year we make contact?
Well, okay, this is a little bit of a story. So everybody, you know, pull their chairs up closer to the radio, turn the log on the fireplace, because this could take a while. I've known Arthur since 1968, which was the year the 2001 A Space Odyssey premiered. A few weeks later, I was so incredibly fortunate to meet him at CBS News, where he and I had been separately hired to be Walter Cronkite's advisors on how do you go to the moon. I mean, it's not like we've done this before, at least in modern history. So CBS, in their infinite wisdom, you know, wanted to surround Arthur with Walter, and for some reason they also hired me. So it was really an amazing adventure for me, anyway. Up to and including going to and from the moon. And then some years later, Arthur and I did various projects together. We did a documentary together. I remember us prowling up and down Fifth Avenue trying to go into they didn't even have Radio Shacks back then. You had to go into a high-end stereo place and try to put together a satellite receiver, which we actually did from off-the-shelf parts that were just beginning. And you should see, I mean, this whole scene appears in one of Arthur's documentaries that was done by a documentarian there in New York, Thomas, I forget the last name. Anyway, they were also involved with the big NASA special Apollo 11 documentary. Anyway, during those years, Arthur and I would talk about a whole bunch of things. And so when the time came for him to consider getting involved with Peter Himes and doing a sequel to 2001, I mean, we all said to ourselves, this can never work. You know, how could you possibly top 2001? So anyway, Arthur, as you know, lived mainly in Shangri-La, a la Sri Lanka. He left the United States, he left England, and he, except for minor trips to and from the Chelsea Hotel down in Lower Manhattan, he basically was a citizen of the world, and he lived most of the time in paradise on the other side of the planet.
He loved it there.
Oh, absolutely. And because he was an avid scuba diver, and you have sparkling seas, and he had a relationship to people that were involved with the tourist industry, and, you know, it was basically right and watch the waves and entertain, you know, people who would come halfway around the world to visit him. I mean, Arthur lived the way civilized people should live. In fact, he was the one that told me that any man who commutes more than 30 seconds from office to home is a fool.
So then I must be an idiot.
Yeah, because you use L.A. traffic.
Oh, my gosh. I know it.
Anyway, so somewhere along in the early 70s, the idea came up that, well, there might be this sequel, and it was going to be called 2010. And Arthur was going to be in Sri Lanka, and Peter was going to be in Hollywood, and they were going to try to collaborate. And I said, given my, you know, 21st century perspective, guys, I think we can do a little bit better. So I created an internet email system for Arthur and Peter with the help of my friend Ren Brick and the distant help of Jacques Vallée, and a company in Silicon Valley, who shall remain nameless, who offered the computer services. And Peter and Arthur were able to actually collaborate electronically half a planet away in a matter of hours when it ordinarily would have taken days or weeks to get manuscripts mailed back and forth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if I had any role to play in Arthur's prolific career, the minor role I had was I set him up on the electronic computerized conference so we could actually do the film with Peter Himes.
Right, Al Gore.
Which brings us to the title, because the title of it was always going to be 2010. The subtitle was very much up for grabs. And I remember one time having a conversation with Arthur, to the extent that, well, if you're dealing with when the monolith kind of makes its presence known to contemporary, you know, U.S.-Russian relations, how would you encapsulate that in some way? And Arthur said very simply, elemental. He says, it's the year we make contact. And yet it wasn't contact with aliens or E.T.
Well, how do you define that, then? What is it?
Because in Arthur's vision, now you have to flash back to his first seminal short story. What was the short story that brought Arthur Clarke to worldwide and forever space fame? It was called The Sentinel.
The Sentinel.
And it was about American explorers on the moon in those early years finding on a peak on the near side of the moon, the side that could see the Earth, a little artifact, an extraterrestrial artifact.
That's right.
Which was surrounded by a ring where no dust had fallen, moon dust, meteors, et cetera, et cetera. The artifact was a tetrahedral pyramid. Can you say tetrahedron? Surrounded by a force field. It basically, in Arthur's purview, in his vision, in the sequence of events that he, in his novelistic side, set in motion as one of the great prognosticators of the future. Remember his book, Profiles of the Future?
Mm-hmm.
Arthur basically said that human beings would come in contact with knowledge of their history, who they were, and who is out there by way of the machine. Not a live being, not an ET, not a multi-tentacled BEM, you know, bug-eyed monster, but a machine.
A rover, something like that.
Well, in the Sentinel, it was a pyramid. It was a tetrahedron set on the moon by someone a long, long time ago from a galaxy far, far away. And when the scientists in Arthur's short story finally were able to crack the force field, the pyramid emitted a tone, a beacon, sent it, you know, at beyond the speed of light, whatever the form of communication was for this super advanced culture, and let the guys who planted the beacon on the moon know that the guys on Earth that they were monitoring had woken up,
yep,
had created technology, had made it to the moon, and had tripped the burglar alarm.
And they're in the club now.
And exactly. Now, that, in order to understand what Arthur meant by this phrase, 2010, the year we make contact, the whole vision of the film, 2010, is the human race makes contact, like Arthur set out in The Sentinel, through 2001, the film and the novel. He sets it out that the first contact we make is by means of an extraterrestrial machine. And I would lay before the House tonight, here at about quarter of the hour, that in fact in 2010, we've had several bites of the apple in terms of Arthur's model that NASA and the White House and ESA and even the Russians have given us if we simply open our eyes and understand the criteria for contact.
Explain
it does
that.
Not mean necessarily people, green or otherwise. It means their technology.
Have they found something they haven't told us?
No, they found something and they told everybody. And I told the entire audience here on Coast, and that's one of the things that we're going to take some time later on tonight to talk about, because it's the most astonishing set of dots when you put it together. It's like one of those Rubik cubes where you flip the last piece and suddenly the whole thing makes sense.
And you see it. It's like a puzzle. You
it's
can't
like
see
puzzle.
It until you look at it.
Yeah.
From
now,
above.
We know these people love puzzles. We know whether you're as part of the Invisible College crowd or you're part of the NASA crowd or the Nazi crowd or the magician crowd or the Mason crowd. We know these guys eat, live, breathe, sleep, and dream puzzles. They cannot go down the hall without doing it according to 19.5 or 33 or some other of these numbers. So if that's true, if all of these various groups, which have some semblance of the truth about this big, big D word, who are we really? who is out there, what has happened here before, et cetera, et cetera. If all of these various factions have a piece of the truth, a piece of the action, how do they talk to each other about it without letting everybody else in on the secret?